Now, once again, here's Mark.
Good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and we're here talking about cars and car repair problems and just about anything you want to talk about. And one of the things that you can do is you give us a call, 602-508-0960, and tell me about the problem or the question, or my husband and I are arguing, or my brother says this and my sister says this, or whatever. We can talk about anything with cars, and if I don't know the answer, I'll really be honest. I'll just tell you I don't know the answer. So it's easy enough to get here, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. One of the questions I had this week had to do with oil in a new car. And let me tell you that the owner's manual will describe what you should use and how long your oil changes should be. But on this newer model car, I looked it up myself, and it's a 10,000-mile oil change interval, and it wants a synthetic oil. And so it's real simple. The nice part about that is it's three oil changes into one, because with conventional oil, we change the oil every 3,000 miles. With a synthetic, we do 10,000-mile intervals. And frankly, there's some cars out there where the owner's manual calls for more. Well, when you get into the 12 and 15,000-mile range, you're talking about once a year. If your car's owner's manual says that, 12, 15,000 miles interval, then you should probably change your oil just before the summertime so that you go through the summer in Arizona with fresh oil. That's kind of how I work it. I just had the oil changed on my truck the other day, and they put synthetic in it. It's a one-ton Dodge Dually, and they put a 10,000-mile stop on the door sticker. So at 10,000 miles, I'll know that I need another oil change. So that's hopefully your shop is doing the same thing. And no matter what your shop says, no matter what my shop says, we can't overrule the owner's manual. And the owner's manual is written for all 50 states and everywhere where that car is sold. Everywhere. So General Motors, Ford, Honda, Toyota, all the big dogs, Dodge, Chrysler, all the big dogs know that the oil and the interval is going to be acceptable, whether it's in Alaska or it's in Phoenix, Arizona in the summertime. It makes no difference. So 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Another thing that often is misunderstood is just the rest of the fluids in the oil in your owner's manual. How about transmission fluid, brake fluid, coolant, differential, transfer case, front differential and rear differential, transfer case, power steering fluid. You look at all that stuff. There's a lot of shops that will choose for themselves, and it benefits them clearly to put you on a 30,000-mile service for many of those. But you're going to find in your owner's manual that there's no 30s. And then we also have specific equipment. For instance, on your brake fluid, we have specific equipment that gives us the moisture content in your brake fluid because we don't want water in your brake fluid. So we check it with litmus paper tests or with machines that you stick the probe inside, and it tells you what the moisture content is. Then you look at the chart and you determine if the moisture content is in the red, the yellow, or the gray green. That's it. We're done. And then transmission fluid, if you're told that your transmission fluid is really ugly, it's okay to say, well, let's walk out to the car and bring a white paper towel with you. And let's pull the dipstick out and wipe it on the paper towel and then tell me, you know, what you see. Here's the deal. If your transmission oil is cooked, it's going to be a brown, reddish-brown, muddy-looking fluid. If it's fine, it's going to be clear to the color of red. That's all there is to it. So if they don't want to go out and pull your dipstick, it's probably because it's clear or to the color of red. And that's what happens in our industry. In the old days, we used to see your car every 3,000 miles. We rotated your tires every other oil change. At 10,000, we did tune-ups. Today, it's 50 to 100,000, depending on what kind of car you drive. So 50 to 100,000-mile spark plug change intervals. In the old days, it was 10,000 miles. Some guys would go 8, 10, 12, somewhere around there. So you have all these moving parts, and you have technology, and the oil of the 70s and the 80s and the 90s is quite different than the oil today than in our decade. Quite different. The oil has it turns to a tar at probably 300 to 500 degrees, and your motor is cooked at somewhere in the vicinity of 300 degrees. It's just cooked. It's done. It's not going to carry you another foot. At 220 degrees is where we want your motor to run in temperature, but when you get up to 300 or 400 degrees, goodbye motor. But synthetic oils will handle that. Now, your motor's still going to be damaged, but it's not going to lock up because the oil is still doing its job. It's still lubricating. It can't have anything to do with you are driving and you're 6 miles from home, and the cooling system collapsed, and you got cooling all over the road, and you decide to drive it home. Anyway, that's typically what happens. In the same way with oil starvation, same way with power steering fluid. We develop a leak, you go ahead and drive it home, instead of having it towed somewhere. And then when you get there, the pump's wiped out on the power steering pump. And oftentimes in the transmission application, when we lose fluid, you're not going to move, so you don't have a choice. Don't sit there and put it into drive and just rev the motor, because the car might move, and the more you rev the motor, you think it might go faster, but it's not. And or your truck or whatever, and you're driving, and you finally get it to roll, and you're just, all you're doing is cooking the transmission when you do that. The transmission is a hydraulic component, and it's going to need fluid in order to operate. And it's got a half a cup or a cup of fluid in there, and you are just smoking the transmission when you do that. Now, if it's full of fluid and it gets to the shop and it's full of fluid and we go drive it and it's good cold and it's bad hot, then the transmission just went to heaven. But it's a bad idea if you spring a leak and you wipe out the transmission as you try to get home. So you spring a leak, you stop, call your tow truck company. Hopefully you have something on your insurance that gives you free towing, and you have it towed to your local garage or the one you choose. So those are kinds of things that we run into kind of on a regular basis. And let's go over an oil change. And I need to give the phone number, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. An oil change is an inspection of your car. It is not an opportunity to sell you everything underneath the sun. Our job is to change the oil filter and the oil. That's our job. We're supposed to physically and visually inspect the rest of the car. We're supposed to check the differential fluid, the transmission fluid, the brake fluid, the power steering fluid, the windshield washer fluid. We're supposed to do all that. And most of us top that stuff off for no charge at all. It's included in the oil change. There's most of us. But you're likely to get a big laundry list of stuff that it needs from the shop, because they use the oil change as the hook to get you in on a $9.95 oil change so they can sell you all kinds of stuff. You need this fluid change, and your spark plugs are old, and you've got a little bit of a drip on a power steering line, blah, blah, blah. The idea is we're supposed to inspect your car, but we're also supposed to be honest about it. You have a slight leak at the low-pressure power steering line. I put a new clamp on it. It stopped, but we're going to keep an eye on that. So I made a note in your file that every time you come in, we're going to look at that low-pressure line. And if it starts leaking again, I want to replace it. So I'll give you an estimate at that time. That's what the conversation should sound like. Your brakes. Your brakes, I don't know if you're going to make the next 10,000 miles on your oil change because of your brakes. So I think probably in the next couple of months, we should do your front brakes. And the cost is going to be $227.27. And so at that particular point, we've done our job. We've warned you. Your brakes are not bad now. But we look at them, and they're about 30 thousandths of an inch away from the squeakers or the squealers. And so we know that little device starts making noise and causing squealing when the brake pad is 90% worn. And so, but some guys will, I've heard that some people will cut that little squeaker off so the brake pad will go metal to metal, and then if they get to do your brake work, we've just tripled your estimate, because not only are we going to hang a set of brake pads on the front two tires, but we're going to sell you a rotor, we're going to sell you a wheel pack, we're going to sell you probably a caliper. So obviously the brake job goes into the $500-$700 range. So those are the kinds of things that hopefully that we can work with, and hopefully you'll be more confident in when you get your car and when you get faced with that kind of stuff. One of the questions I get all the time is, how much air pressure do I put in my tires? There's two places to look. The first thing you want to look at is your owner's manual. And the owner's manual is based on this. If your car weighs 4,000 pounds, each tire should carry 1,000 pounds. That's all there is to it. 4,000 pounds, gross vehicle weight. Each tire has to carry 1/4 of that, so 1,000 pounds. You can go on the internet and find out that if this tire needs to cover, to go to 100 or 1,000 pounds, this tire needs 36 pounds of pressure. If it needs more, let's say instead of 1,000 pounds, it needs 1,200, it might go another 2 degrees higher. That's a waste of time. There's two places to look for the inflation. You can look on the door sticker on the driver's door, and it'll say tire inflation, whatever. You can also look at the tire. And in small letters on the tires, it'll say maximum inflation is this. Now, I run all my cars and trucks at maximum inflation of the tire, and I'll tell you why. It's because the ride is a little harsher, but the tire runs cooler, and in Arizona, a cooler running tire is a heck of an advantage. And I'm not real worried about abnormal tread wear, because that just doesn't happen with tires today. And if me or my wife or the kids hit a curb, a fully inflated tire is likely to bounce off of it or go through a pothole rather than cause the tire to cut itself because it's pinched between the curb or the pothole and causes damage to the tire and the wheel. So those are the two places you can find that information. It's kind of like riding a bike, folks. Remember when you rode a bike as a kid and you pulled it out of the garage and the tires were half flat and you had to pedal your way down to the mobile station 2 blocks away so you could air up your tires? Remember the effort it took to ride the bicycle? And then when you got your tires aired up, then you rode it home and it was like a Ferrari. It was easier to pedal. It coasted better. It rode better. Everything was better. That's what it's all about with tires. Last but not least, when we come back from this break, I'm going to tell you about the temperature of the tires, because this is a new phenomenon that we're beginning to use, and there's some real strong advantages to knowing how to take the temperature of your tire and what that tells you at the end of the day. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Welcome back, everybody. 21 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. If you'd like to join the conversation, if you have a car question, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And I'm going to take Chris, because he called in, and then we're going to continue our conversation about taking the temperature of your tires. So, Chris, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Morning, Mark. How you doing today? I got a question. I never heard anybody ask. Garage door, what's a good place that you'd recommend to put in a standard two-car garage door and opener, and a guesstimate on what that might cost?
Have you got your pencil handy?
Yes.
Okay. Our company does business with a garage door installer, but I don't know. I can't think of their name right now. So you're going to call 480-598-1234. Yep, 1234.
Okay.
Ask for Alan or Andy and said your dad knows, says that you have a customer or that you have a garage door vendor for the shop. Who is that? That's who we use. Now,
gotcha.
You can obviously go garage door installation on the internet, and then you can say garage, and then you can pull up their name, and then you say, I want their ratings, I want their, you know, I want to know what people think of them. But there's a guy in Tempe that's worked for us for many years. I just can't remember what the heck the name of his shop is. And he did our commercials doors in 1994. And then he's done some other work, on our property, our horse property up north. So, we've been pretty pleased with him. But ask Andy or Alan. And if not, both of them have had their garage doors work done on them. So ask them who did theirs.
Okay. Yeah, because a friend of mine pressed the button and the door came off the track. So a guy came out, I'm not saying the name, and they charged her $3,000 to rebuild her 1985 door and put in a new opener. But I'm looking for a new door, too, just because I like to make the front of the house look nicer.
I understand. And of course, the newer doors are, I mean, they're like kind of like your car. Every 5 years or so, there's a significant improvement in much of what the vehicle or your garage door is made of. Right now, I have a garage door in Payson on our barn, and it's really getting old. And I'm greasing the heck out of it, and it's got this rubber belt that drives it, and I know it's going to break, but it's okay because I can lift the door manually and I can close it manually. But I'm with you in the same boat. Sooner or later, I'm going to have to do that. But anyway, thanks for calling, Chris. Gotcha. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Great.
All righty. Okay, we're going to talk about tire temperature. All of us have seen someone driving down the highway, and we have the tow vehicle, and then we have the trailer. And the trailer is not the trailer deck, the floor of the trailer, the bottom of the trailer is not perfectly perpendicular to the road. The nose is down or the nose is up. So the trailer's driving down the road and you can tell it's not level. We take temperature guns and we know that the glue in tires comes apart at about 200 degrees. So not too long ago, a bunch of us cowboys decided to go out and work cattle. And there's a lot of guys with horse trailers. So when we got to our first stop, I decided I was going to run some tests. So I went out there and I took my temperature gun, which is a handheld gun, and you pull the trigger. There's a little red light that goes down. You put it on the crown of the tire where the sidewall meets the tread. So the curve, the edge of the tire. And you're about 5-6 inches away. So I gun the tire. And then it gives me a digital readout. So think about this. I'm gunning the front tire of a two-axle trailer. And it's running in the vicinity of about 130 degrees. I'm gunning the tire right behind it, the number two axle tire on the same trailer, and it's running 40 degrees cooler. So what's the matter with it? Is that normal? Is that acceptable? Or is there a problem? Now think about this. If the nose of the trailer is too low, then a lot of the weight of the trailer is transferred to the front axle. If the nose of the trailer, the hitch of the trailer, is too high, then it transfers much of that load to the back axle. So what you do is you set your trailer based on the tire temperatures of the front and the back tire on your two-axle trailer. And get them as close as you can. That means that the trailer is carrying the load, or the four tires are carrying the load of the trailer evenly. So I've had fun with my temperature gun because I can test a diesel and a gas motor and gun the exhaust manifold, and you can tell which cylinder is misfiring because it's colder than the others that are firing right. So you can use it for that. You can use it for coolant issues. If the motor is overheating, you gun the top hose. The top hose is 210, it's not overheating. The top hose is at 300, it's overheating. So those are the kinds of things. But the temperature gun is the new tire pressure gauge. It doesn't mean we don't have to check the tire pressure. All we have to do is understand tire temperature is important. One of the guys had three horses to the front of his trailer, and his tongue was a little low, and that was the one that was real high in temperature, 130, 140. He just decided to move the horses kind of towards the back of the trailer, and the next stop, the tires were even. So he moved his load to the back of the trailer, which brought the front of the trailer up a little bit, and we began to distribute the weight of the trailer over the two axles, which has four tires, two on each side. So that's kind of how simple it gets when you get into the science of today. Obviously, there is tire pressure monitoring systems that you can buy. We install a transmitter inside of the tire. Then we have it talk to a receiver in the car, and you can drive down the road and check the temperature and the inflation of the tires on your trailer, on your truck, or on all of them. It's not something that's cheap to do, but it's a lot cheaper than two blown tires. So you add up the cost of two blown tires and perhaps a tow truck bill, then you got two brand new tires, and sometimes the wheel takes a beating, but most of the time it doesn't. Most of the time you can put a tire pressure monitoring system in somebody's trailer and truck that didn't come with one. The rest of you with tire monitoring systems, most of the time you only get inflation. But if you get tire temperature, pay attention to that as well. 602-508-0960 if you have a car question or a car problem or a truck. I can talk about most all those stuff, and trailers, motor homes, diesel engines, what kind of belts do you use, Mark? What kind of oil do you use, Mark? And to be perfectly honest with you, let's talk about oil for a second. There's four companies that make oil: Mobil, Shell, Phillips 66, and Chevron. Every oil in every can came from one of those four guys. So I'm not a fan of you buying Chevron because your dad used Chevron and said it was the very best one. I do sell Chevron, but my relationship with Chevron just says I have a relationship with you, and you're going to sell me bulk oil, and based on my volume, I'm going to get a good price. But for years and years and years, I ran a Mobil station, and we poured Mobil oil, and actually that was in the late 70s, or no, that was in 79. Yeah, it's late 70s and early 80s when they came out with Mobil 25,000, Mobil 1, and a 25,000-mile oil change interval. And everybody objected to that. They just couldn't understand that we're going to go from 3,000-mile oil change to 25,000-mile oil change. Well, most of you know that that was a miserable failure because nobody checked their oil. They put the oil in. They set the sticker on the windshield for 25,000 miles, and the motor blew up at about 10. And it didn't work very good because nobody checked their oil, and nobody had oil to fill up. So if they're a quart low, they were just still a quart low. So that was a miserable failure, and I know that our service station, and on behalf of Mobil Oil, we replaced a few engines just because of that. We'll be back. Well, welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. The phone number is 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We've got a couple of callers, so I'm going to graciously go right to the callers. Matthew, you're first. How can I help you?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Okay, I got a 2006 Colorado, 241,000 miles on it, and it's starting to stall when I come up to a stop sign or come off the freeway to stop light.
Okay. I'm sure you have fuel injection in that, right?
Yeah.
Okay. There's an idle air control motor, and the idle air control motor is commanded by the computer. And when it sees you take your foot off the gas and it sees you hit the brake and it knows you're coming to a stop, then it's going to adjust the airflow. In the old days, we used to turn a screw to raise or lower the idle, but today we open and close an air leak to the motor. So if you open it real wide, the idle goes crazy high, and if you shut it off, then the idle goes crazy low, and the motor is constantly, the computer is constantly monitoring the RPM, and it's like maybe 100 to 1,000 times a second, and it's just simply going to open and close until it gives you the 600 that it's been programmed to do. Now, you could have an air leak somewhere where the PCV valve is bad, the PCV valve hose is bad, the EGR is half open, and that causes a vacuum leak, which will affect the idle. But on a 1 to 10 scale, for a good guy that's been in our business for a long time, finding out what's the matter with your idle shouldn't take him more than about 20 minutes.
Okay, cool. Thank you. It doesn't sound like it'd be very expensive.
I would be willing to bet with you that this is going to be a bad connection. It's going to be an air leak. It's going to be a bad idle air control motor. It's going to be something's carboned up. But do you have a shop that you like?
Yeah, I do.
Okay. All right. I think I would do what you did to me. Here's my car, and let me demonstrate to you real quick. It just has a poor idle, and sometimes it dies, and it just doesn't zzzz like it used to. And then what's your checkout fee, and call me with an estimate. So you're asking for two numbers: the checkout fee up front, and then call me with an estimate after the repair. The best that can happen to you, and I suspect it's going to be this, is this is going to cost $85 to find it and $10 to fix it.
Right.
So that's what I think. Okay?
Okay. Thanks, Mark.
All right. You bet. Mark, you're up next. How can I help you, Mark?
Hi, Mark. I've got one of those Ford F-150s that you like so much.
Yeah,
And I'm saying that sarcastically, but
I know.
Here's what I'm looking for. I had the luck to run into a shop in Omaha when the wife and I and the dog drove up there for the holidays, in December, and on the way up, the module for the blower, and we ran into some really cold and icy and yucky weather in Kansas on the way up, but it failed in the on position, so we were getting heat. If we went into the heat, it was like full blast on, and you know, of course, the heater was working, but we couldn't change the, you know, the speed. Anyway, I called the dealership up there near the hotel that we were staying at, and they gave me the runaround, and I don't know if we can get you in, and the diagnostic might be a ton on this and that sort of thing. So I just Googled Ford repair, and literally within 2 miles of the, and a mile from our hotel and 2 miles from that dealership, there was a handful of guys, one old veteran and a couple younger guys that had started their own kind of specializing in Ford vehicles shop. And I was wanting to know if there's anything like that around here, because I will tell you why. Right before I left, I got the oil changed at one of the dealerships here in the truck and made sure everything was ready to go. And, of course, the guy said, oh, you need new brake shoes, and it looks like maybe the front rotors are shot, blah, 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 blah. I said, I'll worry. I don't have time for that now, and I'll do it when I get back. Well, I had the guy in this this independent shop up there in Omaha. I said, well, just will you take a look at them? And he showed me, you know, that was, a load of crap. You know, he actually showed me, you know, they got the little pads there, or shoes or whatever they call them, and how much I had left. And he goes, you probably don't need it for another, you know, 10,000 miles. So anyway, well, I'm looking for that kind of shop.
Okay.
And those kind of guys.
All right. That your experience where you were told you needed a bunch of brake work and then the second guy said you didn't, that happens every day of my life.
Yeah,
I don't understand why.
And the guy was so square. He showed, here's the deal, these three guys, and it was one old veteran and then two younger guys, but they had their own bay, like I said, a mile from, they had worked for that dealership.
Okay.
You know, not the dealership down here, but the dealership in Omaha I tried to get.
I know, but I know that you're drawing a distinction between these three Ford retired guys or these three former Fords and the dealership technicians. It's not fair to do that. There's good guys in both the dealers,
okay,
the independents, and the chains. So all of us, but we all have had the wild man who the technician come up with this idea that we're a little slow on sales. So find me somebody that's at the 70% mark or the 60% mark,
right,
and we'll sell them brakes. So, you know,
right,
that happens. What you did is what you should have done. And that guy showing you what a new pad looks like and he shows his flashlight and shows you what your pad looks like,
yep,
and a new pad looks like, that's the kind of guy you want. What part of town do you live in here in town?
I live up in, kind of North Scottsdale, a little bit south of Cave Creek and Carefree.
Okay. There's Blackwell Automotives at 40th Street and Greenway. And
I know where that is.
Yeah, he's a good guy. He knows right from wrong, and you're going to deal with Aaron, his service manager, and if Aaron ever decides to leave Tom, then he's going to work for me. He's a really good
That's
guy.
That's good to know. So yeah. We got really lucky then for, you know, just stumbling on to these guys up there. You know, I understand what you're saying. We just happen to get some good ones and some straight shooters up there.
You can oftentimes stop at the auto parts stores, and you grab the grizzly guy there, and you say to him, hey, I'm from out of town, and I'm looking for a good shop because I got a car problem. I'm looking for somebody who's been around since Jesus was a baby, who pays their bills, who has great technicians, and is honest as the day is long, and he doesn't order a part, try it, that didn't fix the problem, and he returns it to you. So who is that guy? And in your neighborhood, Blackwell's that guy.
Okay,
thank you very much,
Mark.
Thank you, bet. 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. There's five of them. 602-508-0960, and we'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. 44 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. If you have a car question, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Let me tell you about another good shop in town, Automatic Transmission Exchange. Phil's been working on transmissions since Fred Flintstone and Barney Rubble were around. He now can work on the new 6-speed, 8-speed transmissions that are computer-operated. computer controlled with all kinds of fancy sensors, but he can do it all because he has a fundamental knowledge that we're using electric solenoids and hydraulics in order to shift it from first to second to third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, and eighth. He also knows what the criteria is for that to happen. So if you're anywhere near 40th Street in Washington, he's the only shop I can recommend. Automatic Transmission Exchange, 40th Street in Washington. George, good morning.
Good morning, Mark. Hey, just anecdotally, I worked for a large agency here in Southern California. At any one time, we had probably 60 or 70 Crown Vics, arguably the best, most economical to own police car ever. But idle speed controllers would fail. And it got to the point where these young cops figured out how to drive with both feet. In 5 minutes, they could make it from the police station to the transportation shops. And it was less than 3 minutes to do an idle speed controller replacement. Just nothing to it.
I agree 100% with everything you've said. Now, when we talk about an idle air control motor, it's the idle controller. We're going to control the idle by opening an air duct, so to speak. So if we want faster idle, we give the engine more air, and if we want to control the idle and drop it down, then we shut some of the air off. And so, and I remember, I'm going to tell you my police story. It's not really about a Crown Vic, but do you remember those Bricklin cars from the 1970s?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so
sure.
I'm driving a Bricklin car, and they have gold wing doors in them. And so I get a call that there's a lady that's going to commit suicide in the bathroom of a gas station. So I'm running hot. I get to the gas station, and I can't get out of the car because the hydraulics have failed on the car. So I'm trying to crawl out the window. I'm too big to crawl out the window. So finally some guy comes over and he goes, "What's the matter with you?" And I said, "I need to get into that bathroom right there." And he goes, "You got to go to the bathroom that bad?" I says, "No, there's a lady in there that's supposed to be, you know, going to commit suicide." So he helps me get out the window, and then I run inside and she's okay. I bring her out, and he's got the door shut and the window's still down. And he said, "I just pulled the pin on the door." And I said, "Well, thank you, but you're going to have to help me lift it up so I can get in again." So the Crown Vic was, as you know, the Crown Vic wasn't the most popular police car, but it was fast. It was fast, and it was big, so you could fit like three prisoners in the back seat. But during that period of time.
And a couple more in the trunk.
And then a couple more in the trunk.
But it was very economical to own. They went forever. They're still out there.
Oh, no, I agree with you. I agree with you. It's like the Chevy truck. It's like the F-150 Ford. It's like the Dodges with the 318s. All the V8s, the Ford V8, the Chevy V8. You're right. They just last forever. But anyway, George, thank you very much. You made me laugh today, and I appreciate your call. Thank you. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Automotive Dynamics is in Sun City, and as far as I'm concerned, it's the best by far shop in Sun City. Chuck has owned it since 1982, and he understands the difference between right and wrong, and his mechanics are not paid a commission or a percent of your repair bill, and that way Chuck ensures that they're not going to sell you unnecessary parts or repairs. So if you're in Sun City, Automotive Dynamics is north of Grand, just west of 99th Avenue, so the intersection of 99th and Grand is a place that you can stop. And we don't have any other callers, right, Gil? Okay, lines are open, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, and I'll tell you about another shop. And you can go to my website. My website is marksalem.com, Mark Salem, Salem like the cigarette, .com, and click on Best Car Repair Shops, and my list is there. But I'll tell you about another one that we talked about Blackwell a few minutes ago. But you're talking about Kurtz Automotive. He's at I-17 in Bell Road, and Kurtz is just got ethics down. He's a very nice man, but he understands the dynamics of different shops and different ways to take advantage of customers. And Kurtz is not rabid, but he is just really principled about what he wants his technicians to do. And by far, he's been very successful. He has a tremendous rating throughout the valley. He does really good work, and he, when you bring it in for a problem, he finds the problem, he bids the problem, he fixes the problem, it's under the estimate, and when you leave, you know the problem's solved. That's what it's all about. It's just that simple. So if you live anywhere near I-17 in Bell and you don't already have a service station or service facility that you love, then perhaps Kurtz would be a good place to do that. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And if you have a car question or a car problem, you can give us a call. Tire inflation is a really big deal today because many of the cars' fuel economy depends on you not driving around with flat tires but fully inflated tires. If you want to know how much your tires take, then open up the driver's door. There's a sticker on there, and it tells you exactly how much inflation, 32, 35, 44. It'll tell you. And that's a cold tire pressure. And it's easy for anybody to pull into a discount tire and just say, hey, I just came from my house. Would you check my tires? Discount Tire has taught their staff exactly how to determine what it should be. You haven't been on the road for more than a mile or two or three or four, and you haven't been on the freeway, so the tire's not heated up. So at that particular point, you're set. And so it's important to have the right inflation in your tires for a couple of reasons. Number one, if you hit a pothole or hit a curb, a fully inflated tire will bounce off the curb and bounce in and out of the pothole. A tire that's half flat is going to self-destruct. So it's going to blow out because it's not fully inflated. It's also the tire has everything to do with your fuel economy, because all of us remember when we were younger of riding our bikes down to the local Shell station or Exxon station and how difficult it was to pedal the bike with the tires flat or half flat. When we got to the gas station and we aired up the tires, then the bike was like a Ferrari, and you could pedal it and coast, and it was just like heaven. Well, your car is no different. Your car's the fuel economy and the car's tires, they're directly related to one another, and if you inflate them appropriately, the car coasts well, it bounces through over curbs, and it also bounces in and out of potholes. And like I said, it's easier to pedal a bicycle with fully inflated tires, and the motor is going to work a lot less, and you're going to get better fuel economy if your tires are inflated to the maximum inflation that's either on the side of the tire or it's on the door sticker. Now, there might be where you've got one of them that says 38, the tire sticker says 38, and the tire maximum inflation says 44. Now what do I do, Mark? You can use the 44. 36 is the inflation necessary to carry the car and all the passengers. But you can go above that because the tire maximum inflation is 44. So you can go to 44, and you probably won't notice any difference in the ride, but you're probably going to get better fuel economy, and you're going to certainly get better tire life. Those are the kinds of questions, and those are the kinds of issues that you've got. Many of you have old cars. Many of you have 50s and 60s and 70s cars, and you're wanting to know who does a good job in town. Well, Blackwell does the older cars. Kurtz does the older cars. Larry Harker's, I tease Bob because Bob was around when Jesus was a baby, and Bob knows old cars too, and he's from Larry Harker's Auto. He's over at 38th Avenue and Indian School, and he works on the newer model cars because the fundamentals of the old cars are no different than the fundamentals of the new car. So in the old days, we turn a screw and raise your idle up and down. Today, the computer opens and closes an air leak, an air problem. It's a vacuum leak. Call it a vacuum leak. And it opens and closes this orifice to give you a higher idle, it opens up, and to give you a lower idle, it closes. And it monitors the RPM, and it's working sometimes about 30 times a second. It's constantly adjusting your idle, and you don't even know it. And so that's called an idle air control motor, and we've talked about that here. So Larry Harker's can work on your car from, if it's in the 60s and 70s, 50s, 60s, and 70s, and he's worked on a couple, we were talking the other day, 30, 30s, and 40s. But he's really good with maintenance, auto emissions, and especially the kind of situation where nobody can find and fix this vibration in my car. They're pretty doggone good. That's Larry Harker's Auto Repair, 38th Avenue and Indian School. So the phone number is 602-508-0960. I'm going to take a break here and probably about 3 minutes, and then we're going to have some news, weather, and sports on the top of the hour, and then I'm going to come back, and if you're in line, then I'll say, hey, how you doing, and we'll take your question and answer your question. I'm an ASC Master Certified Technician, and I've been ASC Certified since the 80s, and I've been a master since the 90s. Now, the master has passed all 8 automotive tests. So if you're just ASC certified, you may be ASC certified in brakes, air conditioning, emissions, suspension, tires, that kind of stuff. But a master tech is one that has passed all the tests. And so well certified, and you're best served by someone who is ASE certified, but the next step up is ASE master certification. Now, there's a few guys in the United States that, and we're talking about automotive passenger cars and light trucks. Then we have ASE certifications for buses and big trucks. We have body work. We have transmissions. We have engines. We have a lot of different things, but there's some guys that spend their entire life passing all those tests. Now, those guys have passed every automotive test available through the Automotive Service Excellence Group, and they are very, very well skilled, but typically you're not going to see them because they're going to be teaching classes at the community college, or they're going to own their own repair shop. So, but ASE Master Certified Technicians are more the norm, and those are what you hope that the technician is that works on your car. But there's lots of technicians that have not taken ASE tests, and they're still good. And usually they have gray hair, they got a little grease under their fingernails, and they've been at the same shop for 10, 15, 20 years. And so those are the keys that you're looking for. And especially if you develop a relationship with a shop that, you know, says, "Hi, Mr. Salem, how are you? Gosh darn it, how's your car? Well, Mark, I've got a problem here." And just a minute, isn't Dennis the one that works on your car all the time? "Yeah, hey, Dennis, come here for a minute. Walk out with Mrs. Salem, take a look at her car." That's the old days, but that's still available to you today. That's still available to you today. There's lots of shops out there that have that kind of reputation with customers. At our shop, my daughter runs our shop, and she's been around for probably 20 years when she was 10 years old. And there's many of the older women that do business with us that know my daughter's birthday. So we laughed not too long ago because her birthday came and went. And all of a sudden the lobby's filled with flowers and candy from customers that had remembered that Andy was born and Andy, her birthday. So those kinds of relationships are worth an immense amount of time and effort. And I know firsthand that there's shop owners out there, and many of them I talk to you about, they do stuff for free all the time. All of us feel real blessed, and all of us understand that we're lucky to be in business as long as we have. I've owned a gas station. I started in a gas station in 1968 as an employee, but then I owned my own gas station in 1979. And I've been in the car repair business since 1979. But we all understand the satisfaction of fixing something that nobody else could. And that's what really drives all of us old gray-haired guys, is fixing something that on a car that somebody has taken to 2 or 3 other shops and nobody could figure it out. So 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And we got open lines, 602-508-0960. Welcome back, everybody.
Untangle your tongue. Every time I hear that intro for you, it makes me laugh.
What? Why?
The problems Mark may cause for wives, mothers, or whatever.
Okay. Well, my wife's Renee sitting here, and the reason I brought you here is because the upside card, there was an advertisement on a lot of radio stations and all kinds of stuff, including ours.
Right.
And they talk about the upside gas card.
Oh, now I don't know about a card. We use the app.
App is what I mean.
Okay.
Hey, so it's the Upside app. It's something you download.
That's okay? Right.
And then we've been using that.
Yes.
And we travel back and forth between Payson and Tempe a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And we're getting ready to take a motorhome trip. And so I'm going to say that the Upside app allows you on the app on your phone to find cheap gas or diesel fuel.
Gas. Yes. You can set it to whether you want gas and what grade of, you know,
fuel,
unleaded you want. And then it tells you in your vicinity what the price of gas is and how much you're going to get off, how many cents you're going to get off of that gallon of gas.
Okay. What's the minimum amount? We've had this card for quite some time.
Yeah, probably a year maybe.
Okay, and we've used it a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And so it tells you the cheapest gas and then the highest pennies off.
Right.
So what's the lowest pennies off we've seen?
A penny.
And what's the highest pennies off we've seen?
Probably 25 cents is what I can remember.
Okay, so that's 25 cents a gallon.
That's right.
Okay. Now, they take your information when you get the app.
Okay.
So I know that when we stop and you're getting 8 cents a gallon off,
okay,
then I fuel up, and by the time I get in there, you say, they've already posted the credit on there. About how long does it take?
Yeah, it's usually within 24 hours.
Okay.
Tells you how much you're going to get off.
Okay.
I mean, what your total was.
Okay.
Your total was. And actually post it to wherever you want, PayPal, you know, your credit card, or you can get gift cards or anything you want.
And you can get that money back any way you want.
Exactly.
But we use it all the time.
Yeah, and you can let it build up. Like I let it build up and then I'll transfer it all at once because it looks bigger that way.
Yeah. So how much, I mean, on a typical fill up on your Jeep, how much?
Yeah, well, it depends on the cents off. But like we filled up your truck the other day, half full, I don't know, it was like $1.37, which was only a couple cents a gallon off.
Well, I take about 80 gallons of gas.
Well, yeah, but at that time we were like 50 cents, you know, 50 gallons we needed or something like that. There's no limit on gallons. But I've gotten up to $3 or $4 a tank full.
Okay.
You know, when the gas price is higher, the discount is lower. So 1, 2, 3 cents. But if the gas price gets down, then they give you more off.
It's just market driven.
Yeah.
Okay.
So.
All righty. Okay. Stay right there. I'm going to take a couple of calls real quick. And there was a guy that called in and wanted to know about battery maintainers. And
okay.
We have those in some of our equipment on our tractors and stuff like that, where you plug it into the wall and it's just this little bitty battery charger that keeps the battery up.
Like a trickle charger.
Trickle charger.
Or something like that.
That's the car guy's wife. And I'm sure that's what he was talking about. A battery maintainer, a trickle charger.
Okay.
There's nothing wrong with those as long as you don't bake the battery. So if you ever touch the battery and it's hot, then you got to stop. If you ever see that it starts gassing across the top of the battery and there's a bunch of droplets across the top of the battery, then you don't have a good one. But we use it on stuff that we use. Mm-hmm. And some of our quads at the ranch, we have the battery trickle chargers on those to keep the battery topped off.
Yeah, you've had one on something out here for a while. Do we think we need to check it?
What is that on? That's on the little excavator.
Yeah, exactly.
No, it needs a battery, so I put it. I'm too cheap to get another stupid battery from the shop.
Or you don't have time.
And I don't have time, so that's how it works. Okay, Cap, good morning. Cap, how can I help you?
Hey, good morning, Mark. Always a pleasure to talk to you and your wife. I have a 2005 Chrysler Crossfire, and the lower control arms were changed on the car, and it was supposed to have a wheel alignment done, but they said that they did not have the right equipment to do a wheel alignment. So, on this car, I'm wondering if you could recommend somebody. I'm in East Mesa, so I'm wondering if you might be able to recommend somebody to do a wheel alignment on that car. Also, the steering wheel is cocked to the left on the car.
Okay. Which is two things we fix. Hopefully they did the job right. It's unusual that you're going to do lower control arms and you're not going to have the equipment necessary to align it, and you didn't leave this. See, we locked the steering wheel down straight up. So at the very beginning, we lock the steering wheel down. That way, when we put the tie rod ends on, then we get them close. But yes, that's something that you can do it. Go to Thompson's Auto Repair on Main Street in Stapley. Thompson's Auto Repair on Main Street in Stapley. Tell Brian, Mark Salem says you don't have a prayer in hell of being able to fix this Crossfire's problem. And he's going to laugh. But he can do what you want done.
All right, great. Now, one last question I have for you. Auto repair programs, covered auto repairs, like Car Shield, are these guys any good, or are they a bunch of scam artists?
I hate that market because their job is to come in and give us substandard parts, or they want to provide the part, which eliminates the markup for me. They want to dictate the labor rate, and they want to argue about it. And then half the time, the guy doesn't have as much auto experience as my daughter, who's been there 20 years. And they're telling us how to fix the car, and they're telling us that this isn't it, and all that kind of stuff. We hate that kind of thing. And to be perfectly honest with you, there's times now and lately for the last year, we don't even work on those cars anymore. If we have to put up with some adjuster that was born yesterday and he wants to negotiate a $400 bill down to what he says is $127.32, then you need to take your car somewhere else. So that's how I feel about it.
And you
that
know
was
what,
my thought.
Yeah,
yeah
exactly.
And you know what Mark will tell you a lot of times is whatever you were going to pay for that, put it in a savings account,
yeah.
Build it up, and then when you have a repair, go ahead and make the repair, because honestly, you'll be much happier. People are shocked when we have to tell them they don't cover this, they don't cover that, they don't cover this.
And let me explain who's talking right now. In our family cap, there are two predominant people in our family, Jack the Ripper and Snow White. And Snow White just admitted to you that she hates those people. And it's not that we hate those people, but she works front counter a lot. And so she's used to these guys coming in. But anyway, I've answered your question, and I got to move on. Cap, thanks for making me laugh. Charlie, you're up next.
Hi.
Hi.
I've got a Audi 2013 Q5, and I'm curious. It seems to be using a lot of oil. Is there a reason for that? It's got 90,000 miles on it, and keep it in great shape.
Okay, has it got a turbo in it?
Yes.
Okay, do you ever see any black smoke out the tailpipe?
I do not.
And I want you to go run that like you stole it on a Sunday morning on a big old county road or something. And I want you to throttle it up and bring it up into the red, you know, close to the red on the tack. Do two or three shifts that way and keep an eye on that rear view mirror and in front of you. And I want you to tell me if there's any blue smoke. If I were the one that was going to work on your car, the first thing I'd do is it'd go on the rack and I would inspect the bottom of it for oil leaks. The second thing I would do is I'd probably pull a spark plug or two and look to see if there's any evidence of consumption, and the spark plug will tell me that. What kind of oil are you, not brand, but what weight oil are you using?
I'm using the authorized synthetic that Audi recommends. I had had it maintained by Audi, and then I went to a local guy who is really excellent, and the other part of it is that I went online, and there seems to be that after, let's say, 80,000 miles, the commentary is that the piston rings are going.
Okay, but let me address that. First of all, it drives me crazy, 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 when we go to the internet and we expect to get good information. If you had bad piston rings, that thing would be smoking like a big dog. If you had bad piston rings, you would have fouled a spark plug already. You would know that you're missing a cylinder. You would know that. It wouldn't idle right. It would idle rough. And you'd be spitting blue smoke like some kind of a fog machine. So
oh, wow.
I'm not buying that. The question is, if it's got a turbo, it could have a small oil leak. If we pull the spark plugs and they're all clean, we might as well do a compression test. So and 90,000 miles is almost four times around the equator. Let's not lose sight of how many miles that car has been driven. And at this point, why don't we just thicken up the oil a little bit? Instead of a 10 weight on the 10 side, a 1030 synthetic, why don't we go to a 2050 or something like that? Why don't we go to a semi-synthetic instead of a synthetic? But we first have to check for external leaks, then we have to look at the spark plugs, and then we can decide what to do.
All right, I'll look at that, because we keep it in the garage, and there's no oil stain on floor at all.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, we just want to look underneath it anyway. We just want to look at underneath it, because yes, it could be leaking only when it's moving, and it's going to blow it backwards. So, but that's just the procedure I insist our guys use just to cover our butts, because it's embarrassing to say, oh, you say it's got an oil leak and or it doesn't have an oil leak and now it does. And so I don't want to be involved in that kind of back and forth because it embarrasses me.
I understand. That makes sense.
Okay. Yeah, all right. Thank you very much, Charlie. Chuck, you're up next.
Hey, Mark. You were talking about those heat guns. So I pulled mine out and checked my temperature at each spark plug. And I'm running between like 230 and 240 degrees, except on the front one, it's 180. And I wonder if that's something I should be concerned about.
No. Is it a four-cylinder?
No, it's a V8 Chevy Silverado 4.8.
Okay. And so you gun the exhaust manifold on all of these?
Yes.
Okay. That is unusual. At first blush, I would think that it's missing and that we're not consuming all the fuel in it, but you'd have a check engine light.
And yeah, I don't have any check engine, and it idles. You can balance a nickel on it. I mean, okay. It idles so smooth.
I've never seen this before. I've never had anybody tell me that they're gunning the exhaust manifold or they're gunning next to the spark plug, and we have that kind of a discrepancy. Because I would expect that when this cooling system is up to par, those spark plugs are all around them as cooling system, and I would expect that you're going to run somewhere in the vicinity of 230, because we want 220 is a normal range. That's what we want you to run, and which is usually 5/8 of the gauge, just a little over half. But why don't you do this? This would be fun. Why don't you switch that spark plug with the one next to it and see if the problem moves?
Yeah, that's a good idea.
So just
I'll try that.
Okay, well, good luck to you, Chuck. Thank you very much. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, and we'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. 20 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. My name's Mark Salem. Sitting next to me is my wife of 472 years, my business partner.
Please don't make me any older than I am.
Yeah, my business partner and frankly knows as much about cars as many of my buddies.
Oh, I don't know about that.
Well, but you've been around. How many work orders have you written in your life?
Quite a few.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. I think we're up to 250,000 or something like that on the numbers.
Yeah, could be.
So, anyway, we're going to go to the phones. Jerry, you've waited, and I appreciate that. How can I help you?
You know, I love your show. I save up all of my errands I need to run for the week, and I run them on Saturday morning so I can catch your show. I can listen to you read the telephone book to me. It's crazy.
Hey, did you listen to the first hour of this show? I thought I was going to start reading the yellow.
I know. It's really great. So I've got a 2010 Honda CR-V, 85,000 miles, but here's my question. I bought a 5-quart jug of Castrol full synthetic, 520, which is what I use in my Honda. Okay. When I got it at an online auction, when I picked it up on the label, it said Euro style engines and mine's a Japanese. Now I think I know what you're going to say, but I thought I would run it by you first.
We've had that question before, and as best as I can remember, it has to do with the first digit of the VIN number, which tells you where it was made. And there is a small group of people in our industry that are going to argue that there's a difference between that oil. But when I call my contacts at Chevron and at Mobil and at Phillips, they all snicker and they all use bad words and they all call me names. And so the answer to it is don't worry about that difference. If it's a 520 and it's a sin oil, then just use it. And if I were you, I'd just get on the internet and find the cheapest one I can find. Because
yeah,
like
that's
I
what
said,
I've done. I bought this one at an online auction. I don't usually buy Castrol because they quit supporting John Force and NHRA. So anyway, I got it for a song. So I wanted to make sure I could use it.
Okay, and just remember, Castrol's going to be actually Mobil, Shell, Phillips 66, or Chevron. So
exactly.
I tell people all the time, just shop price. Get the cheapest SF you can.
Yeah, well, it sounds like you got a good price. So
yeah, you did. Yeah, you did.
Yeah, for 5 gallons, I think I got it for about $14. Gallons, 5 quarts, 14. Oh. Yeah, but it's an online return goods auction, and it was all up to snuff. Somebody bought it and returned it, so it was my gain.
You got 5 gallons?
Five quarts.
I'm sorry, five quarts. Okay. Yeah, absolutely.
All right. That rivals the cost of our bulk purchases for a quart of synthetic. That rivals the cost of $14. We have 300-gallon tanks, and we have, how many have we got? Four?
Four or five.
Four or five 300-gallon tanks that have 30 weight in them and transmission fluid in them and synthetics and semi-synthetic and all that kind of stuff. And you would think, because I'm not buying the bottle and the cap and the box, that I'd be cheaper. But to be honest with you, it's pretty expensive to just do bulk. But we squirt it in your car, and I can put 5 quarts of oil in your car in about 12 seconds. Mm-hmm. And so it saves us some time, and we don't have to throw away the cans and the bottles and the cardboard. So that's how we do it. But thank you for calling, Jerry. Thank you very much. Mike, you're up next. How can I help you?
Yes, sir. I wondered if you have any recommendations on someone who could jam a window so it doesn't fall down freely anymore. I just want it jammed up.
Oh, that's, yeah. What part of town are you in?
I'm in North Phoenix, around I-17 and Northern.
Call Action Auto.
Okay.
Action Auto, and this is how it sounds. I have duh-duh-duh kind of car, and it's got something wrong inside the door so the window doesn't stay up. And I want you to take the door panel off, and I want you to push the window up. And then Mark Salem says that you have an arc welder that has a flame the size of the sun. And I want you just to tack weld the linkage to where the window will never come down again. Yeah.
I think we might use those vice grips to keep them up.
No, we do.
Okay.
But that's going to add another $12, $13.
Oh, well,
and you know, something else you can do, too, is we can also, on the track, we can also just drill a quarter-inch hole and put a quarter-inch nut with two nuts on it, and it'll hold the window up.
Yeah.
All he wants is the window up. And here's the deal. If he ever does fix it, the cheap son of a gun, his wife's saying this now, the cheap son of a gun.
Uh-huh.
If he ever does fix it, then you just pull the bolt out, and there's a little hole that you drilled in the window regulator, but it's not going to affect the operation.
Okay.
So, yeah, call Tom at Action Auto. He's a good guy, and he can help you.
Thank you much, sir.
All right, you bet. TOT Action. So what else is new? You got your new Jeep.
Yep.
My wife went out and bought a Jeep, and it's got a diesel in it.
Yeah.
How does it run?
Really good.
Really?
I like it. And it's quiet. It sounds like a girl diesel. It doesn't sound like a guy diesel.
Oh, it doesn't sound like my truck. It sounds like a girl diesel.
That's right.
So this is the Jeep Gladiator, and you love it.
Yeah, I do.
And it's quiet, you say.
Yeah, it's real quiet.
Is it quiet on the inside or quiet on the outside?
It's quiet on both, I would say.
Okay.
There's a little bit of, because they have those T-tops on it, there's a little bit of air noise that I've noticed that I'm not really used to in a vehicle. But,
okay.
You know, I'll get used to it, I'm sure.
And folks, the reason why we bought this Jeep is we do some off-roading, but more than ever, it was an easy exchange for us to pull behind the motorhome.
Right.
And we're going back to Indiana to the factory that made our motorhome, and we're going to a rally, and so the Jeep fits our needs for both on and off road. Plus, we are a diesel family, and so our shop is set up to handle diesels as well as gas, and so how does it run? Have you had any floor stomping green light kind of things?
No, I think you have, but I haven't.
You said the other day that it has far more pep than you thought it would. So tell me the circumstances on how it had more pep than you thought it did.
You were driving.
Oh, that's not true.
That is true. No, it you know, picks up and goes if I need it to, but okay. I don't usually race people like you do. So.
No, I don't race people.
Okay.
I'm just in a hurry sometimes. So when you get on the freeway ramp, you can kind of throttle up hard and be moving.
Keep
with traffic.
With traffic,
when
absolutely.
You're down at the bottom.
Yeah.
Right, what don't you like about it?
I haven't found anything yet.
Okay.
Other than Alan put some pretty big tires on it, so it's a little hard to climb up in, but he put some nice steps on it, so it's good.
Okay.
But it rides real smooth, I feel like, even with the bigger tires.
Mm-hmm.
And nothing yet that I have, you know. And I think this is the first Jeep we've had in the family.
Yes.
What do you say?
Yeah, for all of your family and
right.
all of my family.
Mm-hmm.
Let me tell you about the tires.
Alan weighed the Jeep.
Right.
And then he has a chart. And maybe the Jeep holds 40 pounds of pressure at the maximum. But he found out, based on the weight of each tire, that he can put 32 in it. That's going to soften the ride up a little bit.
Right.
And it's going to make it ride a little bit better. But they're 38-inch tall tires. That's what he put on there.
Mm-hmm.
And he did that to raise it up a little bit. He put a lift kit in it. But what about those fancy lights you got in the front?
Oh, yeah. Those are nice, too. But I think he did all this because he thinks he might be taking it to the rock rallies or whatever he does, but I'm not sure I'm going to let him do that quite yet. I might want to drive it for
a little bit. He's your mechanic. He's your son.
I know. He could. I'm sure he can do it.
Well, just tell him that he's not allowed to compete.
I might be taking it somewhere that weekend
or something. Oh, yeah. Oh, great. Great. Yeah. Stingy.
That's right. I know.
Anyway, our son does build and we are tied in with rigid lights and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And so in the bumper, there's two squares that used to hold two parking lights or two fog lights. And he put in some white bright lights that he has a switch for you. Mm-hmm. And when you turn those on, it's 180 degrees of real white light for long ways.
Yep.
602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Welcome back, everybody. 602-508-0960. Got three lines out of five available. 602-508-0960. But we're going to go to the phone just to Richard, and then we're going to pick up Bryce. So, Richard, you're first. How can I help you?
Thank you, Mark. I've got a 2007 Toyota Corolla, 66,000 miles on it. I'm going to need probably belts, hoses, transmission flush, you know, things like that after, 80,000? Can you give me the name of a one of your top shops? And I'm in Scottsdale on the 101 and Frank Lloyd Wright.
I would call Bridwell Automotive at Scottsdale and Lincoln. Bridwell, B-R-I-D-W-E-L-L. Bill,
uh-huh.
Bill, that his boys run the shop now. But Bill was there when Clydesdales walked up and down Scottsdale Road, and he's been around the block more than once.
Not Dinosaurs?
Yeah, no, he was here just after the Dinosaurs because he used to carve the bones. But let me ask you a question. Your 07 was due for a lot of this service a long time ago when it comes to time. But it's okay that you're doing this at 60K, but I agree with you. Spark plugs, fluids, belts and hoses, that's your target. Now, you may have already had the cooling system flush because you had a water pump put on it or something like that, so we skip that. But in your case, spark plugs, belts and hoses, and fluids, you're due.
Okay, great. I bought it a year ago, and it had 63,000 on it. And according to the record, she had all that done. So I'm just wondering what I should be looking forward to in the next 20,000 to 30,000 miles.
Okay, fair enough. And you say to them, tell me about the condition of the belts and the hoses and then all the fluids on it. Tell me what you think. Because we can all look at the fluids, we can smell the fluids, and we can come to a conclusion. They're either going to be mud and brown, or they're going to be cherry or green or yellow or amber. You know what I mean? So it's not going to be hard for those guys to handle it. Okay?
Okay.
Okay. Thank you very much, Richard. Bryce, you're up next. How can I help you?
Yes, sir. Enjoying your show.
Thank you.
Hey, got a hypothetical question here on a shop compressor that's been neglected and not drained routinely. Have you ever seen one rupture and blow? Well,
they will rust out if you don't drain the water off of them, but I want to tell you that you and I will both be 10 years older if we started now and we ended up with some possibility of an air leak around the bottom of an air compressor tank. So I don't know that I'd be real worried about it, but I can tell you there hasn't been an air compressor made that had a tank that didn't have some way to drain the tank. And in your case, just got to find it, take the plug out, let it air out a little bit.
Well, yeah, no, it 30-year-old 20-gallon tank and just got lazy over the past 10 years, and do I need to build a scatter shield for it underneath? Or
No. Well, obviously, I can't look into the future. Well,
yeah.
Let me change the question. Mark, have you ever seen a compressor blow up and hurt somebody, the tank? No. Have you ever seen a compressor take off like somebody lit a firecracker and put it inside of a something to make it fly? No, I haven't. And Mark, how long have you been around compressors? Since 1968. Did everybody always drain their compressors? Not the guys I worked for.
I know that question too.
If it's got a drain, if you pull it out and it'll fill a small pill bottle, then you have nothing to worry about. But if it makes a spot of water that's 6 inches or 6 feet in diameter, then what I would probably do, is it a compressor that's big, or can you manipulate the compressor? Can you shake the compressor? Can you?
It's a 20-gallon horizontal one.
Okay. So. All right. What I do is alcohol absorbs water. So I would take this thing, pull the drain, and if there's a lot of water in it, I'd just lay it on its side. I'd put some alcohol in it. I'd put the plug back on it. I'd shake it up, but don't plug it in. Shake it up. Let it sit overnight or a couple of days, then drain the alcohol out, put the plug back in, and I'd be done with it. That's how I'd handle it.
All right. That's a good deal. Nobody makes Lakewood scatter shield for those, do they?
I just don't think – I have been wrong before, okay? I have been wrong. If you talk to my wife, I'm wrong every day about something. But I've not seen what you're scared of. And frankly, you could also take it. There's three or four companies in town that deal with air compressors, and you could take it to them and say, hey, you know, would you service this for me and do the oil and filter? And by the way, check the tank and check it for any kind of problems. You could, on the very bottom of the tank, you could take a ball peen hammer and you could gently tap around the drain.
Drain plug. Okay. Yeah,
and you'd hear it, because if you tap over here up high, 6 inches from the floor of the tank, you tap over here, that's going to be one noise. But if you go down there by the drain and it's all rusty and it's weak, when you tap it with the ball peen end of a hammer, there's going to be a different noise.
Okay. Very good.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're an expert in metallurgy too. Good deal.
No, I'm a good BSer. That's what my wife would say. But I think I've given you good advice. All right. Thank you very much, Bryce. 602-508-0960. We got five lines open, and we'll be right back. Well, we're running and gunning. Let me tell you real quick that Strictly Diesel Service and Repair is in North Phoenix. He's on I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road. When it comes to diesels, Chevy, Dodge, and Ford, of the 3/4 and 1-ton variety, he is the king of diagnosing and repairing those. That's all he does. And I met Nate a long, long time ago, and I was impressed with him from the very get-go, and he continues to be a source of information and help me as well. So if you're looking for the best diesel guy, and you got a Chevy with a 6.6, or you got a Ford with a 7-liter or the 5-liter, or you got that Dodge with a 6.6, you'll have no problems with Nate at Strictly Diesel. We got lots of callers, so we're going to go through them as quickly as we can, and we're going to start with Don. Don, good morning.
Hey, buddy, how you doing?
Good.
Is Renee still sitting next to you?
Or did I'm not going to tell you.
She was there a few minutes ago, so hi, Renee. Right.
I'll turn on your microphone for you.
You told her a couple weeks ago that you were not going to let her be on the radio anymore.
He does that all the time. Yeah, he does
Shame
that
on
all
him.
The time.
Anyway, I got a call to the shop. I got a call to the shop, and Andy even let me in the front door.
Was the door locked?
No.
We're pretty proud of the kids and how they've taken over the shop.
Yeah,
but
I don't blame you.
They know all of our vendors. They know you. They know our relationship. They know all of that kind of stuff. And Andy will say, you have the weirdest group of friends, Dad, of anybody I know.
Well, that's because we're old-fashioned.
And that's right. We are. So what's up?
My Buick 3.8. I haven't changed the oil in a couple years because my wife was driving the car before she passed away, and then she decided not to drive, and I haven't changed the oil, and I'm getting a ticking sound like a tappet noise, and I'm going, okay, well, should I just go ahead and change it because it is over a year old, or just drive it because I put a couple hundred miles on it, and, you know. None.
Well, I'd get a long screwdriver, and let's make sure it's coming from the valve cover, because a ticking noise can be an exhaust leak. A ticking noise can be a flywheel problem. A ticking noise could be... Oh, it does go away? Okay,
well,
if it goes away,
yeah.
I'll tell you what I'd do. I'd hop in that Buick. I'd probably put it in third. I'd get on the I-17, and I'd flow in with traffic, and I'd drive it for half an hour north and then turn around and come back home, and then I'd drain it and change the oil then. That's how I'd handle it.
Okay, because I've driven it to State Farm Stadium and back. It doesn't
all the time. I need you sustained driving load highway speeds. I need to get it up to operating temperature for 20 minutes
right.
to 30 minutes. That's what I need you to
right.
do.
Okay.
Okay?
And then, yep, and use my synthetic oil.
And yes, whatever oil you choose, but let's just get the oil in there up to operating temperature, and let's get it hot so it'll drain out and you won't leave half that peanut butter in there, okay? All right,
yeah.
Thanks, Don. Thank you very much. John, you're up next. John, how can I help you?
Yeah, question. I got a 72 Skylark 350, pretty much went through the whole car. Original has 95,000 miles from original owner. It sits more than it should, and I let it sit for a couple months. And the gas was bad, so I siphoned out the gas, put in about 4 gallons of VP race fuel, and then started it every couple months. And how I'd started, I'd just pour a Dixie cup full of gas down the Quadrajet, and it'd start right up and run great. Well, one time it didn't, and every time I ran out of the gas, I poured down the carburetor, it stalled out. So I replaced the fuel pump, and I checked it first, and it seemed like it was getting some fuel out of it when I was cranking, but I replaced it anyway because it's so easy to do. And then I went to take off the fuel line that goes into the carburetor. You have a fuel filter in line right there, and the line was old and it twisted off, so I fabricated another one, built up a new fuel line. In the meantime, I pulled off the Quadrajet, and I'm going to take that apart and see if there's carburetors gummed up or the float stuck or something. Anything else you recommend on that?
No, I mean, you've pretty much done the I mean, I disagree with what number three is. I think number three should be in number two, and number two should be number four. I mean, it's pretty easy to check fuel pressure on a mechanical pump, and you check suction and pressure. And
okay.
You're jumping to a lot of stuff, but I would have sprayed the Quadrajet with a bunch of carburetor cleaner and see if it starts and runs, because if it does, then it's a fuel starvation problem. I would not be pouring raw gasoline down a car that old for fear of a backfire and then a fire, and then all of a sudden all your hair on your head's gone and all your nose hair is curled up, and your wife's called the fire department because the last time she saw you, you were running through the neighborhood with your hair on fire. But I love what you're doing, the old Quadrajet. We all know that. But let me just give you the best advice I can. You can buy all the rebuilt Quadrajets you want, but you're never going to get a good carburetor unless you hire some old guy like me or someone else. There's a lot of us out there that know that carburetor inside and out. And you'll just be a whole lot better.
Yeah. It only has like 500 to 800 miles since I did have it rebuilt, and it ran perfect before that.
Okay.
It's just it sat too long. And one other question with the car, when I start it and it runs, it seems like it's dual exhaust, and it seems like the left exhaust burps out like residue. The driver's side exhaust burps out.
I wouldn't worry about that. Maybe I'm going to have to go here in a minute, but maybe that the drain on that muffler is allowing condensation to be in there, so it's blowing some black out the tailpipe.
It seems like water and soot.
Yeah, yeah. And if get underneath there with your little drill with a something slightly bigger than, you know, 2/32, 3/32 bit, you're going to find a drain at the back of the muffler. Put that drill bit in there and clean that drain. Then have your wife crawl underneath there, put her face right in front of that hole, and then you start it up and rev it up and see if you're still married.
I wouldn't recommend that.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Okay. All right, John. Thank you very much. Great. Or George, you're up next. George, how you doing?
Oh, great. We have a place up in Pine Top, so when we were driving from the valley up to Pine Top, on the way back the last few times on the steep grades, when I, you know, as the car's accelerating, I mean, I try to keep it really, say, around 60 or so. It's a 2018 Honda Pilot. All of a sudden, the steering wheel starts vibrating, and you hear this vibration. So the brakes are, had them checked, everything's fine. And then I just, you know, take my foot off the brake, and then the vibration stops. And, again, unless the car accelerates on some of these steep grades quite a bit, I try not to put my foot on the brake, but, there's some steep grades coming down. So just wondering, is that something that you can diagnose when you're not, it's hard down here in the valley to take it to a shop and say, hey, you know, when I'm going down a 6% grade, everything's vibrating.
Okay. This is pretty simple. You just take it in and tell them you got a brake pedal pulsation. That's all you tell them. Let them figure it out. Brake? Is it wheel brake pedal pulsation? So when you're applying the brakes, the pedal is pulsating. That's all they need to know.
Yeah.
And then their job is to check the wheel bearings. They're going to put a dial indicator on the wheel bearings. They're going to put a dial indicator on the hub. They're going to check the wheel bearings. Then they're going to do a rotor run out to see if one of the rotors has got a wobble. They're going to look and probably lubricate the slides on the caliper. And somewhere down that line, they're going to fix it. On a 1 to 10 scale, you're talking about a 4. So that's no big deal. Do you have a shop that you deal with?
Since we bought it from a dealership, that's where we usually go to, a Superstitions Honda. So I don't know if that's
there in Mesa?
To your place. Yeah, in Mesa.
Okay.
Yeah,
so I would go to Thompson's. Thompson's is Stapley and Main Street. Brian's got, Brian could work for me tomorrow. He's a well-respected, his family's been in Mesa for 150 years. I think his dad knew Jesus Christ, and he's been around the block. So I take it to Thompson's. Okay. I think you'll get more personal service there. Okay.
And because I'm old and forgetful, it's brake pulse. What did you say?
Brake pulsation. I have a brake
pulsation.
Yeah, brake pedal pulsation when I'm at highway speeds. Those are the key words. Brake pedal pulsation at the highest, at higher speeds, and then my wife starts screaming and using bad words, and I need you to find out what's the matter with it.
The guy that walks on water. Okay, great.
All right. Thank you very much. Chris, you're up next. How can I help you?
Hey, good morning, Mark. I just wanted to add something to your program. I don't know. I've been living in the Desert Hills area now for 4 years, and it's been hard to get your radio station, but today I went on iHeartRadio.
Yeah.
And you're on iHeartRadio. I had never heard that before on your program. So I got fantastic reception again. I enjoy listening to you.
Well
thank
you.
That's all I got.
But thank you for that. Here's what, we are a part of the iHeartRadio network, and sometimes for whatever reason, I don't know the mechanics of it, sometimes I have a whole lot of people calling the show from other places in the United States, but I'm used to that because I used to do KMOX out of St. Louis, and that was a huge station that covered from southern, the Gulf of Mexico to the northern border, and from Nevada to Washington, D.C. I want to tell you a quick story. Here's the story. I'm in KMOX in St. Louis. This guy calls up and he says, I'm a cab driver. And he says, I've got this problem with my cab. And he's telling me about the cab. And I said, okay, well, this is what I want you to do. And da, 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 da. And he goes, I got a fare. And I said, okay. And he goes, I can't do it right now. And I said, and I'm teasing him. I go, why not? And he goes, okay. And he pulls off to the side of the road. And I had him cycle the key and I had him wave a dead chicken around his head and honk the horn twice. And he goes, you fixed it. And I says, yeah, I'm pretty good about that. And it was turn off an oil light is what it was, an oil service light. So I said, do that.
Geez.
And he goes, what do you think I had to charge him? I says, I think you ought to give him a $5 discount. And he goes, okay. So I had a lot of fun in the Midwest when I was doing radio for KMOX because the people in KMOX, the people in the Midwest are quite different than the people in other places of the country. They call up and they say, I've been dealing with Tommy since he was knee-high to a jackrabbit. I know his daddy, his granddaddy, and he's a great guy, but the other day he caught my car on fire and he burnt the barn down. And I was wondering what you think I should do. Well, anywhere else in the United States is the guy burned my barn down and the car he worked on caused it, and I want to sue him and I want the name of a good lawyer. Yeah. So that's how it is in the Midwest, so to speak.
Yeah.
And, but anyway, I had a good time.
You should mention iHeartRadio more because we don't usually do that, but
you're right.
We do know that you can get your show from there.
And thanks a lot, Chris. Thanks a lot, because I'm going to get my butt chewed by the station and my wife for not saying that we're on iHeartRadio.
Yeah.
Anyway, Chris, thank you very much for saying that. Thank you. Oh, and we have another caller. Who might that be?
Say hello to Brian.
Brian, good morning.
Good morning, Mark. Quick question for you. Okay. I have a 2022 Ram 1500 TRX, so okay. the supercharged engine. Since day one when I bought it and drove it off the dealership, it has had a driveline, a drive shaft thunk or clunk. So when you come to a complete stop, it feels like someone's kicking the bottom of your seat. And then when you accelerate, again, you feel that clunk thunk under your seat.
Okay.
So I guess it's common enough that Ram came out with a technical service bulletin on it. They came out with a boot kit, some grease, et cetera, et cetera. So I took it into the dealership. They installed it. It ran great for about a week, and then the clunk thunk is back. So my bottom line question is, outside of it being a daily nuisance, feeling that, is it something that they should be able to fix, or is it something that I just live with?
No. This is the beginning of this whole, traffic pattern. Are they talking about a boot on the drive shaft and lubing the slip joint on the drive shaft?
Yeah, I believe they take the drive shaft off, lube the splines real good, and then put it back and that's supposed to leave it.
Okay, here's what happens is when they send out this memo to everybody, there was quite a few guys that said, I think it's the drive shaft. So now we're doing that. But there's going to be four or five or six more stopping points here when they realize this isn't it. This isn't the fix. And now let me ask you this simple question. When you had it done and they greased the drive shaft and pulled it out and lubed the splines, it was gone for some period of time, yes?
For about a week, I did not feel it at all.
Okay, that's good news because we're close to being good. Now, what they'll probably do now is put an O-ring on there or a new seal and try to pack that with some grease and keep it loose a little longer than it was. And they may even put a new snorkel on it with a greaser on it where you can pump. But we don't want to pump a bunch of grease or lube into the back of the transmission or the transfer case if it's a four-wheel drive. We don't want to do that.
Right.
But just here's my advice to you. Every time you take it in, you tell them you got a clunk. And I bet the repairs are different. Sooner or later, Chrysler, just like Ford and Chevy and Honda and Toyota, they'll fix it. But you know what?
Okay.
When they fix it, they're going to call you first because you're one of the guys that's been in, had it for a year and a half. So that's they're going to work on it.
Yeah.
Okay, Brian, thank you very much. And my email address is Mark with a K, mark@marksalem.com. mark@marksalem.com. If you have a car question, if you'll give me a phone number, I'll call you, but I'm going to call from a blocked cell phone for obvious reasons. And if you'll tell me, you can call between 5 and 7 or 5 and 8 or something like that, then I'll do that. I'll see you next week.